The Acolyte has garnered a lot of controversy, and of course, we will take our obligatory looks at The Bad Batch and X-Men 97, Episode 3. This is Geekville Radio, and it starts right now.
Geekville Radio.
Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen, geeks and geekettes. This is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville and the host of Geekville Radio, coming at you with episode 354. You should be able to find the show notes in the podcast player, or if you cannot, you can just go to geekvilleradio.com/354 to follow along with the show notes. We'll get to our regularly scheduled reviews a little bit later, but I do want to talk about The Acolyte here. Because it's kind of to address the big yellow bantha in the room about what the show could be about. And the creators have said some, shall we say, interesting things that certainly don't sound very reassuring. But let me give the full caveat and full disclosure here. I'm personally going to withhold any judgment about the show itself until I watch it. I did enjoy the trailer. I thought the trailer looked really good. I have no problem if this turns out to be like the Jedi equivalent of a Scooby-Doo mystery or something like that. I think a murder mystery could certainly be interesting. It's like a detective story, only the Jedi are the detectives. I know the creator, Leslie Headland, said that she was comparing it to Frozen meets Kill Bill. So what could that mean? It's a pretty safe bet that it won't be a musical, but Frozen was about two sisters kind of learning to love each other despite their differences, and Kill Bill was about, well, killing Bill. But for me personally, that would seem to be a story about two sisters. So I think just shooting from the hip, maybe one sister is trying to kill the other. I think it is something that definitely stems from the opening scene of the trailer where Saul is going through all the Obi-Wan lines of close your eyes, can't trust them, yada, yada, yada. So I think the other sister would be the proverbial Bill in the analogy. And I did see some people objecting with how Carrie-Anne Moss's character fought. I said it the first time that she was probably simply fighting defensively. I would add that that's exactly a way Darth Vader was fighting as he faced Luke in the lightsaber fight at the end of Empire Strikes Back. You know, he only used one hand. He just kind of moved his wrist. He didn't dodge much out of the way. He didn't do any kind of sweeping motion or anything like that. No killing blows. I think that's a similar idea here. Because we also see the assassin clearly fighting in a similar mode as Darth Maul. Whether it's wushu or just flips and kicks or something. She was doing a lot of those motions that Darth Maul did. And since this is kind of the first ripples of the reemergence of the Sith, it would stand to reason as to why people be perplexed as to Jedi dying. We have been told, however many generations, a thousand years, a thousand generations, Jedi were peacekeepers. So there is no grand-scale war going on here. And we did hear Ki-Adi-Mundi say that the Sith were extinct. Not only that, I would add that and raise you a Mace Windu, because in that very same conversation, Mace Windu said he didn't think the Sith could come to power without them noticing. And as I have said on these very airwaves and in real life, one of the problems with the Jedi is they developed a tunnel vision. They had their way of doing the Force, and they didn't really care or look into the ways other people knew the Force, hence how the Sith are able to be right under their noses without them noticing. And also, if those types of Force users have been gone for a millennia, then how would they truly know what they would feel like in the Force? I think that's a fair question to ask. They've been gone for 1,000 years, so how would you know what that kind of Force would feel like? We know we can sense light, and we know we can sense darkness. What if there's just a clouded shroud behind that Force presence? There's also the rule of two. My understanding, and I am always open to correction, but the rule of two came to be after the fall of the Sith. It was Darth Bane that introduced the rule of two, because the Sith were so power hungry amongst themselves, they basically wiped each other out, or at least had a big hand in wiping all their own kind out because they were so power hungry. So it's possible the Jedi may not even know about the rule of two until something that might be learned of this story. I could be dead wrong on that. I may be right, but in the same movie, Phantom Menace, we went from we think the Sith are extinct to, well, there can only be two of them. So where do they get the there can only be two of them if there was a Sith Empire 1,000 years before this? Now, this would be about the time of Darth Tenebris, because Darth Tenebris is part of the Disney canon. For those who may not know the name, Darth Tenebris was actually Darth Plagueis's master. Obviously, we know Palpatine, Darth Sidious, was the apprentice to Darth Plagueis. Well, Darth Plagueis was Darth Tenebris's apprentice before he killed him. And Darth Tenebris was actually a Bith. So yes, he is a Bith Sith. It's only natural that there'd be one. Now, if they follow Legends continuity, which of course they don't have to, Tenebris would be in his prime about now and may not even be a Sith master at this point. He might not even be the Sith Lord. He could still be the apprentice and have a master that, at this point, we do not know about. Because before Darth Tenebris, there's very little in the official Disney canon. There's stuff in the Legends, but not so much in the Disney canon. So it's a pretty safe bet that, again, this is the emergence of Sith. It was Plagueis, actually, in Legends canon, that told Palpatine that Qui-Gon had to die. That you specifically have to make it a point to take down Qui-Gon Jinn because he is going to figure this out. That's in the Darth Plagueis novel for reference. But again, that's Legends canon. I don't think Disney necessarily is bound to adhere by it. Now, yes, we've seen a lot of Jedi before, but this looks to be exclusively a Jedi story, where probably just about every character we see is a Jedi or Force user. There's no blasters. We know there's knives. My hunch is we aren't going to see much of an underworld. Because now, this is, again, I am open to correction, but I always figured the whole criminal underground, the underworld and the smugglers and all this stuff, that became more of a thing because of the Empire, not so much the Republic. The whole reason the smugglers would exist would be to transport stuff that would otherwise be heavily taxed or heavily regulated, if not just flat out illegal. And what's one of the things that kicked off the major problems in Phantom Menace? It was taxation of trade routes. Now, I don't think we're going to be blessed with massive trade negotiations and taxations and things like that. I'm just saying I don't think we're going to see nearly as much of an underworld. We're probably going to not see many smugglers or trigger-happy anti-heroes or villains or anything like that. It's probably going to stick pretty much to a Jedi story. We did see the end of the trailer. We did see the red lightsaber. We saw all the other Jedi ignite their lightsabers in their various colors or flavors, you know, the orange, lemon, blueberry, all that. You put them together, all these five colors, you put them together and they become Captain Planet or something. So we know we're going to get that. I've seen nothing in the trailer itself that makes me think the story is going to be bad. The things that do concern me are things that the creators have said. I touched on it last time when I reviewed the trailer, that Leslie Headland said something to the effect of, whatever you think it is, it's not. That is not a very reassuring quote to me, because to me personally, that simply comes across as somebody that is trying to outsmart the audience. And I don't think fans go to a Star Wars movie expecting to be outsmarted. I don't think they would watch a TV show and try to figure out, oh man, I mean, we do make predictions and such. And yeah, some people might not like that the story will go in the direction they wanted. That's my big beef with The Last Jedi. I'm not going to get off on that tangent because there's been, 7 years of controversy with The Last Jedi. But I can see people not liking that their predictions turned out to not be true. But when you say stuff like that, like, well, whatever it is, you're wrong, that just makes it sound like you're trying to outsmart the audience, you think you're smarter than the audience. And really, when it comes down to it, filmmaking, TV, yes, it is an art form, but Disney Plus is a business. Star Wars is a franchise. The entire reason stuff like this exists is to make money. And it rarely ends well when you try to convey to the audience that you're smarter than they are, because they're not looking to be outsmarted. I also think some of the other stuff about trying to build new fans, trying to introduce new fans to Star Wars. We want to gear this towards people who have never seen Star Wars before. Well, you can do that. I'm not saying you can't make a series or a movie that people who have never seen Star Wars before can enjoy. But when you start saying you're trying to reach a new audience or a new generation or anything like that, you're basically saying that the multi-billion dollar franchise that has existed for almost 50 years somehow needs new fans. Well, you're getting new fans all the time. The brand is so big that there's people all the time that are going to see it for the first time. So I don't get why you feel the need that you have to try making new fans. And again, it goes back to you think you're smarter than the audience and you're telling part of the audience they don't matter. That's, again, that's not very good relations to have with what is potentially supposed to be your paying customers, your paying audience. It's not a good business practice to try to tell your customers, well, whatever you think we can do, you're wrong. It's good to be creative. It's good to have to have a story that you want to tell, but don't try to make it about you. And that goes for any walk of life, any faith, any political party, gender, age, whatever. The best stories are not going to be about you. It's about crafting a story that will get people involved. You want to make a movie that people will want to pay money to see, or a series. You're going to want to make a series that people are going to want to fork over their hard-earned money to Disney so they can watch this interesting TV show. So that's my opinion of it. I hope I am wrong in some of these suggestions. Hopefully it's going to be a great show. And like I said, I am going to reserve judgment on the actual quality of the show until I see it. I enjoyed Obi-Wan. I really enjoyed Ahsoka. And I've said many times before, I think The Bad Batch is one of the best things about the Disney era of Star Wars, and certainly those seasons of Clone Wars. But I can't shake the fact that when you talk about building a new audience or you're tracking this or that, you're doing what appeals to you or what you relate to and things like that, you're basically telling a certain portion of the fan base, the potentially paying customers, we're making this for us, not you. And when you tell people that, a very good chunk of them will say, oh, okay, fine. If you're not making it for me, I'm not going to watch. And we've seen it happen where it underperforms and then people get angry somehow at the fans that are disgruntled because they didn't watch, and they didn't watch because they were told it wasn't for them. Seems the problem could be avoided by not trying to alienate part of the fan base in the first place. And I reiterate, that goes for any belief under the sun. We're not just talking about a certain group of people here as a whole with that logic, because there's been multiple people of varying characteristics, varying degrees of opinions and knowledge that have said that exact same thing. So cautiously pessimistic is the way I would put it. I'd rather set my expectations low and have them exceeded than to really hope there's going to be something awesome and then it turns out to not be. So with that said, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll stick in the Star Wars universe for a little bit and we'll talk The Bad Batch. And again, after that, we will close it out with talking X-Men 97. This is Geekville Radio, and we will be right back. All right, we are back. And as promised, we're going to dive into more Star Wars, but this time around The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 9. The title is The Harbinger, which it's a pretty safe bet. This was a title kind of sort of how The Mandalorian titled some of their chapters, where the blank in question was presented in the episode. In this case, The Harbinger was the returning Asajj Ventress. Now, full disclosure, I did not read the Dark Disciple book. My understanding is that it was taken from what was originally intended to be a story arc in the Clone Wars animated series. So it is canon, and I believe that involved Quinlan Vos. It had Ventress show a sensitive side. She basically tried to sacrifice herself to save Quinlan from Force Lightning. That's my understanding. Again, open to correction. GeekvilleRadio.com or Geekville Radio on Facebook, X/Twitter, or at Instagram. You can also email Seth at GeekvilleRadio.com. If I'm wrong on that, set me straight. But there's no explanation given as to how she survived. Maybe something that is will be brought into light later. But from what I recall from Clone Wars, Ventress was also from Dathomir. The Witches of Dathomir, and it was the Witches of Dathomir that essentially saved slash brought back Darth Maul, healed him of his kind of the insanity he had and gave him the metal legs and all that. So it's very possible they had some sort of, you know, Lazarus pit, if you know your DC Comics references, and that could have been what saved her life. Maybe there was some sort of deep coma inducing thing that can be done, like slowing the heart rate and such. Maybe it's a way she was able to cheat life sign detections. That's just my own speculation there. But obviously she is alive. She turned up in this episode, and she was, in fact, the person that Fennec Shand was talking to, not Boba Fett. But this makes sense as well, because it is a pretty safe bet, since Ventress had been working as a bounty hunter for the last several years. It's possible Fennec knew about her and also knew of her abilities to use the Force. So when you think about it, who better to talk to about M-Count than somebody who is also a bounty hunter and a Force user? The other big thing about this episode is we finally got, at least for the hero's sake, a brief explanation of M-Count. I think it's also the first time the Force has been addressed in The Bad Batch, because we'd been spending the entire show dealing with or former clone troopers. It makes sense that they wouldn't know anything about the Force, but I did enjoy kind of the training scenes, the training montage. It does kind of fit with what Yoda was doing with Luke and what Luke did with Rey. I'm not quite sure how trying to climb up a mountain and get a flower in time is supposed to prove your worth. It sounds like the old German folk song Edelweiss about trying to prove your love by getting this rare flower. Spoiler alert for that song, people die getting that flower, but no need to go there. It was also cool how when the Bad Batch got it confirmed as to who she is and they tried to take her down, she took them all down 3-on-1, or 1-on-3, I should say. It's very Batman-like, quite frankly, the way she was able to kind of use momentum against opponents. She clearly was not using killing tactics. She didn't go for a lightsaber until they pulled the guns on her. And I would also throw it out there, again, she fought very defensively, much like we saw Carrie Ann Moss's character do in the Acolyte trailer. She wasn't fighting to kill anybody. She was fighting in self-defense and in kind of more an incapacitating capacity. And, of course, we also got the obligatory encounter with her. This time it was a sea monster, looked almost like a Kraken-type creature. I have no idea if it was a real thing or if this has been in any actual Star Wars lore. And I do like that Ventress is the one that calmed it down and not Omega. I think some of us might have seen it, like it might have been too obvious if Omega did it, but it would also be kind of a big step for that to happen. I think it shows that Ventress is out of her bloodlust phase that she might have had when she was a Sith apprentice, or at least assassin apprentice to Count Dooku. You know, she's no longer the kill first, ask questions later type. And maybe she just knew that this wasn't a creature that was evil, just a creature that was probably hungry. I don't think she's evil at this point. She's very much, to use the alignment chart for D&D, she's very much true neutral, if not chaotic neutral. Doesn't want people to get too close, you might say, but she's not evil. Her days of being thought of as a villain, I think, were ended after she was double-crossed by Count Dooku during the Clone Wars series. But I think this was kind of the end of the second act of the season, you might say. It's certainly, at the very least, well into the second act. We may even get a fourth act, but we get the kind of storms coming, storms brewing, big problems are happening, Wyatt Earp yelling, "Hell's coming with me," and Tombstone, something to that effect. I think we're about to kick into gear and get into the main climax of the season, the climax of the series. Hopefully, we'll see a lot of action at this point on. Again, pedal to the metal. We might get those episodes that take place right after another 2, 3, 4 episode long story arcs. We don't have to get that in order for it to be good, but I'd like to think that's what we're going to get, because we got a lot of plot lines to resolve in about half a dozen episodes now. But overall, I gave the show a B, got it back on track. Now that the M-Count mystery is out of the way, at least for our heroes. We can get more of this progression to the main story. A pretty safe bet we'll see Ventress again. Like I said, I think my hunch, my prediction is going to be that the bounty hunters will band together to form some sort of ragtag fugitive fleet, to quote Battlestar Galactica. It's going to bring about the kind of clone revolt. You might call it the Second Clone War. I think that's what the third act of the season is going to be. So we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we will wind everything up with talking X-Men 97, the third episode. This is Geekville Radio, and we will be right back. All right, we are back, diving into the Marvel side of Disney. We're talking the third episode of X-Men 97, and this brought about a lot of what we talked about last week. A lot of it did come about. It just came about a whole lot sooner than I thought it would. I thought this might be something that would stretch out over several episodes, much like the Phoenix Saga did in the original series. But they pretty much summarized a good chunk of what the Inferno storyline was in a single episode. And we did get, as I had speculated, we got a PG-friendly version of the Goblin Queen's outfit, because anybody who saw the outfit in the original series, not something you'd probably want in a animated show that might be geared towards kids. But everything from the clone snapping because she wasn't the real thing and being cloned by Sinister and then becoming the Goblin Queen and wanting to take baby Nathan away, all that stuff is right out of the Inferno storyline. Really, the main thing we didn't get was Cyclops blasting Sinister into pieces in the comics. But we did get kind of clone Jean, I guess we can just call her Madeline since she took that name at the end of the episode, that warped reality, creating hell effectively. We saw a lot of that in the comics, but there's a lot of stuff that probably would not have been seen on network TV on a Saturday morning. We saw monsters look like something out of a Lovecraft book, monsters crawling out of the TV like something out of The Ring, blood splattering, a lot of disturbing visuals that probably would have been deemed too scary for children, and that's without even getting into the horrors of infecting an infant child with this horrible virus. So covered a lot of ground, felt a bit like a highlight reel, but if it leads to bigger and better stuff for the rest of the season, I'm certainly good with that, and we're probably not done with Madeline yet. Now, I also thought it was a pretty cool way that Cyclops charged up Bishop by zapping him with the optic blast, and it'll also be interesting to see if we get Cable again, because we got Cable in, I think, the first or second season. But this was pretty much a self-contained episode. We got some teasers that are probably going to be fleshed out, but this was just pretty much a straight-up second part to the second episode. We got Sinister revealing that he cloned Jean, that he was after the child, technovirus, the whole nine yards. I think it'll be interesting to see where Madeline goes from here, so that's going to do it for this episode of Geekville Radio. If this is your first time hearing us, first of all, of course, welcome. Hope you liked what you hear. You can find us on a plethora of podcast platforms, pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. You can find us on geekvilleradio.com. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much you name it. Just do a search for Geekville Radio. You can find our family of podcasts. This is kind of the flagship podcast. We also got Examining the Doctor about Doctor Who. We got Examining the Dead about horror. Mature content warning on that one. And we got the Lesser Known Geek Hall of Fame, where we talk some of the lesser known heroes that might have influenced geekery, the comic industry, or sci-fi, or anything even remotely considered geekery, stuff that might have inspired the big waves in that. And we have the Nostalgia Trip, which I believe we'll be doing an episode of that soon for the X-Men animated series. And then we also have Classic Wrestling Memories for the wrestling fan of yesteryear. If you like your old school wrestling, you can check out Classic Wrestling Memories as well at classicwrestlingmemories.com. As always, give us a follow, give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. I'm always looking for ways to improve this show. So the only thing I ask in reviews is just be honest. Let us know how you really feel. I'm going to shut down the power here in Geekville Radio Studios. We'll be back sooner rather than later, and we'll talk to you folks again next time. We'll be right back.
Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any products or services unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests do not reflect the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, the Wrestling Brethren podcast, family, or any of their affiliates. Some media used in Geekville Radio is the product of their respective copyright holders, all rights reserved.